Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, the podcast where wealth becomes your greatest ally in achieving your dreams.
All right, dude, you left us hanging last time and you gave us this hook, right? Kiyosaki says savers are losers. Meanwhile, the whole last episode was like savers sounded like winners. What's this about, bro?
Well, savers are getting in the game. At least savers get to play, right? Savers get a shirt with their name in the back. And one thing I want to say about Kiyosaki, I like the fact that I've been able to glean a lot of wisdom from him, even though he's not just another talking head that does exactly what I do. I don't really want to surround myself with people who think exactly the way I think, because then one of us isn't necessary, right? but Kiyosaki has a lot of great principles, and he applies them, executes on them differently. So the last time I checked, he said he had over 100,000 doors. So he had over 100,000 rental units. He and his wife, they own golf courses, they own restaurants, they own hotels, they own massive amounts of real estate. And he started out with one rental in Hawaii. He's from Hawaii. And I just love this book called Second Chance. And I've been recommending it. And it's such a great title, because how many people do you know have made a little bit of a mess with their finances in the first 20 years of their earning career, maybe in the first 30 years? And some people will come to me and say, you know, Joe, I really wish I met you 20 years ago. And is it too late for me? And I say, well, I don't know. How old are you? And they say, I'm 45. And I say, 45. I have socks older than you. So yeah, there absolutely is time for you, especially if you're breathing, right? So I come across people who are 60 years old. They say, listen, Joe, can you help me? Because I'm going to retire in 5 years. How are you going to retire with no money? Well, it's 65. You know, it's time to retire.
Mandatory.
But getting back to Kiyosaki, writes this great book called Second Chance. And he makes a distinction between two groups of people. Savers, which I refer to as savers, because I don't want to be disrespectful, because Kiyosaki calls them losers, right? And for all the negative things that I'll list out. So he makes a distinction between and a contrast between savers, which are losers, and rich people. And the way they approach money, you know, they're not rich people because they woke up one day and they had an inheritance. They became rich people because they started the same as everybody else. They started at zero and they decided to pursue a particular strategy to build wealth, right? So let's start with savers. Savers think that the end game is saving, right? So they want to put money into savings, and we'll talk about an ordinary savings account at a commercial bank, right? You open up an account and the bank is going to give you a certain interest rate. Let's say it's 5%. Now, you know, that's a really, really generous savings, right? So let's say it's 5%, and you know that they're going to pay that 5% for the next 20 years, right? Wrong.
Way.
They're going to pay that 5% as an introductory rate. And 90 days from now, they're going to say, well, you know, you have to have a minimum account balance and you have to maintain it. And if you don't, we're going to charge you a fee. And also there's going to be a debit card fee, and there's getting to use the ATM machine is a fee. And we'll let you know what the rate is 90 days from now. And then we'll announce a different rate by the end of the year. And next year, we'll just see what the traffic bears. I mean, isn't that pretty much the way savings works? You put the money in, you know that financial institutions are good for it, right? Because they're the most solid entities on the planet. We believe that because they're made of steel and brick and mortar and marble, and they're really beautiful buildings. So they must have money, right? If they built these beautiful buildings. So we put the money in, we let it sit. There's a key. We let it sit and we earn interest. Oh, by the way, at the end of the year, you're going to get a 1099 from the bank for the interest that they paid you, right? You don't have any expectation of what the interest is going to be even next year, let alone 5 years from now, but you know that the money is safe and secure and it's accessible. And oh, and here's a big thing. You've got FDIC insurance. Now, that should be another episode because FDIC insurance covers about 0.5% of all the savings in America. So if too many banks go under, FDIC insurance is not going to be effective. And what's going to happen is what happened with the bank in California. They had a $200 billion bankruptcy just last year. And the president got out in front of the mic and he says, we will absolutely make every single saver whole. We will not let anyone lose money because of the bankruptcy of this bank, $200 billion. By the way, about 95% of those assets were not covered by FDIC insurance because the accounts were in excess of $500,000.
Too big.
So that means that we as savers had an FDIC premium come off of our account in order to pay for all of FDIC insurance. And FDIC insurance wasn't effective for most savers. Therefore, the other 95% that were covered, guess who covered those losses? That's right. You and me. Taxpayers.
Tax dollars at work.
That money is coming out of the Treasury because FDIC doesn't have it. Therefore, FDIC goes to the Fed. Fed goes to the Treasury, right? It's a little bit of a Ponzi scheme, but they're allowed to do it legally. All right, back to the saver. So the money that's building up in the savings account is also subject to the claims of creditors. So if you have a savings account and you wind up getting sued, somebody slips and falls or wins a judgment against you for some reason, they can go to the court, get a judgment, and go to the bank tomorrow morning, present the judgment, the lien, the seizure order, and they can literally tap into your savings account because your savings account is not protected in any state that I'm aware of from the claims of plaintiffs, right? So you don't have credit protection. You don't have any expectation of long-term interest. You have taxation on that account. And the interest that you are earning isn't even keeping up with inflation. So literally every year that you keep a balance, you're falling behind. Now, beyond that, I may have mentioned savers are relying on the money in that savings account to buy their liabilities. What do I mean by a liability? Well, a car is a liability because it's not an appreciating asset. If it's not appreciating, it must be depreciating, right? I just bought a Ram 1500 for about $82,000 2 years ago, paid cash for it through my family bank. And I just recently got a solicitation to buy a new truck, and they're going to give me $45,000 in exchange for my existing truck. So that kind of proves to me that a truck is not an appreciating asset, right? So Kiyosaki calls them losers because they're using their seed corn, they're using their capital to go out and buy depreciating assets or liabilities. So what happens when you do that? Now your capital account is reduced back towards zero again. What happens when you have an emergency? What happens when you have to pay a big credit card bill? What happens if you have an emergency room visit? You're going to tap into your seed corn. You're going to tap into your capital account. Now, by contrast, what do rich people do? Rich people use their savings as the down payment, and let's call it real estate. They go out and they buy real estate. Well, how do they do that? They take their savings, put it as a down payment. Then they use other people's money. See, this is how rich people get rich, is by the intelligent use of leverage, right? So if I am going to go out and buy an apartment building, a fourplex, I'm going to use other people's money. I'm going to finance 80 or 90% of it. And now I'm going to create cash flow, right? Because cash flow is what creates wealth. So now I can use my cash flow to buy those liabilities. And in using the cash flow only, I'm not disturbing the rents that are coming in. I'm not disturbing the appreciation that's coming in. And I'm also borrowing money at the most efficient rate I could possibly borrow, which is called tax deductible. Right? So poor people, savers, losers are paying tax at their highest bracket on the earnings that they earn in savings. Rich people are borrowing money at the most efficient rate, which is the tax deductible rate. So they're using other people's money to buy capital assets that they're going to own, that they're going to grow and appreciate and buy more of them. They're going to create cash flow, go on vacations and buy their liabilities for that. And they're going to build wealth because of the proper use of leverage and buying more and more properties, maybe expanding into businesses, serial businesses, multiple different types of industries. They're looking for capital assets that are going to create cash flow and produce their wealth. So they've got the growth of the asset, they've got the cash flow, they have the equity, they have a deduction on their interest cost. Difference between rich people and poor people. Now, by the way, those poor people are relying on that FDIC insured account. I hate to remind people that in this century, since 2001, over 500 banks have failed in the United States. So, you know, there's a truth about what happens when you feed something, you get more of it. What happens when you starve something, you get less of it. When you feed the FDIC beast, you have more bank managers, bank founders, who have permission not to be accountable. Because if the government, if the taxpayers are going to bail them out when they fail, what's their loss? What do they have to worry about? Well, I don't have to worry about my savers because they're covered by FDIC. So if we lose, we'll just close up this bank and maybe we'll start another one.
Dirty.
So savers, if they leave that money in too long or buying into, investing into a losing proposition, it's a losing system.
Now that you've explained it, it makes a lot of sense, Joe. So tell me this. It looks like next time we have something coming up about retirement. It looks like there's no retirement in the Bible. Can you give us a little teaser?
Sure. Yeah, well, a lot of people are looking towards that golden day when they can hit the red button and walk out of the factory for the last time and go off in the sunset, buy that boat, go to the beach, take their grandkids on trips and just enjoy their golden years. Well, I don't know how golden those golden years are if you haven't built the memories. And if I built the memories, those memories have been built by experiences. So I've been enjoying life throughout my lifetime, and I just want to continue doing those things. Well, why would I want to put such a divider between my working life and my retirement life? Don't I want to continue to do the things I love in retirement? If I can wave a magic wand, how much of my money in retirement would I want compared with how much money I was earning? Well, most people, if they have any sense, are going to say 100%.
At least.
Is that practical? Is that practical? If I was making $100,000, well, I better have $2.5 million in the bank so I can pull out $100,000 in earnings in retirement. Is that practical? Do most people have $2.5 million saved up? Probably not. But let's get to the core of it. Is there really a necessity to retire at some presupposed age? Am I supposed to retire at 65 or 67 because somebody says I should? If you go into the Bible, I don't find retirement in the Bible. And now what I found in my personal experience is the more I do, the more I study, the more I search, the more I serve, the better I should get at what I'm doing. I should create more value this year than I created last year or 10 years ago. If I'm creating more and more value the further along that I go, why would I want to stop? The only reason I would want to stop is because I'm not enjoying what I'm doing in the first place. And if you're not enjoying what you're doing in the first place, you should stop doing it now. Don't wait for retirement. Go find something that you can fall in love with. And don't say that you're too old because Colonel Sanders started KFC after the age of 65.
All right. So that is a little preview of what's coming up for you next time. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And thank you, Joe, as always, for shining the light for us.
This is the PodcastFactory.com.